morning, everybody. I'm going to begin by an introduction, just setting the scene about access to abortion, looking at the data in terms of abortion in Northern Ireland, and then focusing particularly on what has been the political discourse about abortion in Northern Ireland, and then moving on to looking at the impact of the opening of the Mary Stopes Clinic, which opened last year. So my approach generally is a feminist analysis, and I've conducted a review of academic material, content analysis of the Assembly debates. I've also taken part in participant observation research with pro-choice groups in Northern Ireland and interviewed a range of stakeholders. So I suppose the work today is very much a work in progress. Most of my research to date is focused on the role of pro-choice activists and data on abortion tourism. So what you're seeing today is kind of a paper that's underway at the minute. So internationally, access to safe, free, legal abortion has been recognised by, for instance, the United Nations going back to the 1960s. And very much placed within that framework from the 1960s onwards, that access to abortion is key to the empowerment of women. Despite that, if you like, international-based policy agenda of allowing ready access to abortion, abortion stigma remains in many societies, and a lot of misinformation about abortion, for instance, that that liberal abortion laws will see an increase in the level of abortion, and actually the evidence shows that's not the case. So if we look just briefly, this is a map of abortion laws throughout the world. So the red areas are those where abortion is effectively almost completely illegal. Orange is just to preserve the health of the woman, and the green areas where we would deem to be these liberal laws. Obviously, that's data from 2003. If you looked at particular areas, and if you look at the United States, there have been a lot of movements over the past few years in particular states of really restricting that law. So that's very much seen on a global scale, but obviously within particular countries, things are changing. Notably, and particularly in some of the countries that are red, the legislation there is based on legislation from the time when that particular country was a member of the British Empire, and the legislation is based on the 1861 Offences Against the Person Act, and that brings us very nicely on to the legislation in Northern Ireland, which is based on the Offences Against the Person Act, which says that abortion is illegal. So a woman who obtains an abortion, or an individual who helps a woman obtain an abortion, is subject to penal servitude for life. The abortion law was reformed in England, Scotland, and Wales in 1967. In Northern Ireland, case law over the last century has added some further context to the abortion legislation. And the case law states that in circumstances where a woman's life is in danger, or the pregnancy poses a real, serious, permanent, or long-term risk to her health, then abortion can be deemed legal. Those who cannot access abortion then are forced to travel outside of Northern Ireland to England and Wales, which is the most common, to further afield or to purchase the abortion pill from internet sources. Those travelling outside of Northern Ireland must pay as private patients. So in Northern Ireland you have UK citizenship. But if you want to access an abortion, you cannot access an abortion on the NHS in England and Wales. So you must pay as a private client. You must also then pay for travel and accommodation costs, and that obviously has serious implications for women who are on low incomes. The lack of clarity of the law and the absence of clear guidelines for medical staff have meant that there are cases where abortion should have been carried out legally in Northern Ireland under that restrictive legislation, and the abortions have not been allowed to happen. Now, there's been a recent case in the media that has highlighted that, and that was a case of fetal abnormality. The case was brought to the attention by the media, by the Stephen Nolan Show. Stephen Nolan, for those of you who don't know, is effectively known as the political opposition in Northern Ireland due to the complete ineptitude of Assembly to actually take any effective action on quite a number of social issues. So Stephen Nolan is the guy who's kind of the first stop. If you have an issue, whether it's to do with something to do with health service that isn't working right, literally he's the first point of call for the general public to raise significant issues. And so a family went to the Stephen Nolan show and said, you know, we have been told that our child is not fatal fetal abnormality. There's no way that it will survive childbirth. She's likely actually to die in uterus before that. And the gynaecologists have told us we can't have an abortion here in Northern Ireland. Now, probably stepping back about 12 months ago, they would have been able to have that abortion. But in March of this year, the Department of Health released guidelines which were described by the most senior obstetrician in Northern Ireland as creating a sense of fear amongst the medical staff. And he noted that, for instance, the Health Trust in Northern Ireland were told by their legal advisors not only not to offer abortions at all, but also not to even offer any advice on cases of potential abortion. And that was because the legal guidelines were so controversial and essentially, for instance, were asking medical staff, if you think there's a potential here of an abortion being carried out illegally, it is your responsibility to report that to the police, to the authorities, etc. Now, legally, the medical staff in Northern Ireland have no actual, if you like, any detailed training, for instance, on abortion and the legal situation. The medical students here have an optional programme where they can sit through a session by a legal specialist, but it's not core. So they're left in this situation where they're vaguely aware of what the law is, but in terms of implementing it, they have no core advice which to do that in. And I flagged this up in particular because what happened in the days that followed that case hitting the headlines was, the abortion case was presented as being, if you like, a deserving case of abortion. It wasn't this reckless teen who had been out and had a one-night stand, didn't use contraceptive, and just decided, I'm 18 and I don't want to be a mum at this stage. So the media presented it, and the politicians were very open to discussing it because it was seen as a very deserving case about abortion. So looking at the data then, in terms of abortions carried out on the NHS, on average, over the last period of time, on average 45 abortions have been carried out per year in Northern Ireland. We contrast that then to the number of abortions carried out in England and Wales by women who travel there, who declare their residence as Northern Ireland, and that's an average of 1,000 a year over the last decade. And I emphasise that that's women who declare their residence as Northern Ireland because, for various reasons, they may decide not to say, when they arrive at the abortion clinic, what their actual address is. So that's, if you like, what the reported instances of women going to England and Wales to obtain abortions. In terms of support for greater access to abortion, we have very little in terms of a very strong evidence base, but opinion polls have been conducted by the Belfast Telegraph, and opinion polls have been conducted by the Family Planning Association here, which show that there is, generally speaking, broad support for some type of legal reform in Northern Ireland. There's also been research conducted on the gynaecologists here in Northern Ireland, and again, broad support for reform of the legislation here. Pro-choice groups have obviously been very clearly lobbying for that reform, and they are supported in that by the trade union movement as well. So why does abortion remain so restricted in Northern Ireland? And I suppose there's two key arguments on this. First of all, to do with the level of religiosity here. So there's a sense that we're a very kind of morally conservative country, we're very religious, and the churches are against abortion. Well, historically, actually, they haven't always been against abortion. They haven't. I mean, if you look back to the 17th century, the Pope there issued two rulings that allowed for abortion. So historically, abortion was actually permitted up until the period known as quickening, which was when the woman began to feel the fetus moving. More recently, obviously, over the last period of time, the churches have been very clear that they are anti-abortion, and their relationship with the political establishment here is seen as influencing greatly the political establishment and their thoughts on abortion. The other key argument then is the whole positioning of gender equality in Northern Ireland. We are not known as a society that is very strong in terms of its gender equality. Going back again in time, abortion was first criminalised by Parliament in 1803 on the premise that women needed protecting from unsafe abortions. That argument was used again when the medical establishment wanted to minimise the role of midwives, again against this argument of being unsafe abortion, and we needed to protect women in that respect. And this argument over protecting women is evident in the debates in the Assembly, which I'll talk about shortly. So various commentators have noted that Northern Ireland, to see that quote from Smith, that Northern Ireland is a highly sexist and morally conservative form of cultural politics. And one of the legacies of the conflict here is that the roles of men and women have been traditionally mapped out and they have not changed over recent times. And I suppose related to that is the whole sense of moral conservatism. That sense that there's a hostility there to abortion and hostility to sex unless it's for procreation. So if a woman has said she has had an abortion, that immediately labels her someone who has had sex. She's labelled as being a low moral standing, etc., etc. So that role of moral conservatism is prevalent as well. If we look at female representation in the Assembly, 18% of our MLAs are female. Now you contrast that to Wales and to Scotland, there's a significant difference there. So 18% of MLAs are female. The first sitting of the Assembly after it came into being, after the Good Friday Agreement, there was a very, very strong gender assignment of roles. So women were overrepresented on the Department of Health, and they were not represented at all in the committees for finance, for instance. Whilst there has been over the last decade some changes in that type of issue in terms of representation, the Assembly itself remains deeply patriarchal. And a recent study by Hazel McAllister emphasised that, talked about how female Assembly members are subject to widespread, persistent heckling and abuse, that gender issues are afforded a secondary status by the Assembly, and that there's been overwhelming and continuing opposition amongst the politicians to looking at abortion, to even discussing it in committee stages. So we have, of the 108 MLAs, two are openly pro-choice. In an anonymous survey of MLAs by the Family Planning Association last year, 66% of them said they would like some reform of the legislation, although the response rate was only 33%. So, privately, I have talked to MLAs who have said, I am actually supportive of reform, but I can't come out and say that publicly. So there are a number whose personal beliefs would allow them to actually support reform, but because of party politics, they won't actually come out and say that. So the political discourse on abortion is very strongly dominated by the DUP and the SDLP. So the DUP, very strongly influenced by fundamentalist Protestant theology. They have links to the Caelid Foundation, which would like to see a more literal interpretation of biblical law, which doesn't believe in evolution. The SDLP, obviously influenced by conservative Catholic theology. So access to abortion is one of those rare, contentious issues in Northern Ireland where there is actually no sectarian divide. Okay, so what I wanted to highlight here is, and I focus particularly on the DUP because they are the ones who have been most vociferous in their views about abortion. So our Minister for Health has asserted, for instance, that pro-choice is pro-death. He argues that there's no public support for reform of the abortion legislation. The Deputy Chair of the Health Committee has asserted that abortion should not be available to rape victims because, in his view, the ultimate victim is the child. and the child should not be terminated on the basis of that. Minister Poots has also said he believes that having an abortion increases the chance of breast cancer by 50%. Now, that type of evidence is used very strongly by the anti-abortion lobby movement and has been completely discounted by the medical profession. So it was very much within that context then that Mary Stopes International opened in October of 2012. It offers a wide range of sexual health services, including early medical abortion. And I suppose four things happened immediately after the opening of the clinic. First of all, the media accurately reported on the law. There had been a very strong sense that no one, you know, abortion either isn't allowed at all in Northern Ireland or is only allowed on NHS premises. So the media, for instance, were immediately forced to think about, well, how can Mary Stopes operate on this basis? How can they actually offer these services? So they began to present a very detailed analysis of what the legal situation was, and generally speaking, did report that accurately. Pro-choice groups then came out and offered their support for Mary Stopes. Anti-abortion groups organised protests, and there's an image here of one which was immediately outside the Mary Stopes clinic. Political, religious and legal figures were all very vocal in their disapproval. So again, we had a minority of politicians who were positive about it, but the vast majority were quite negative about it. And these are some of the images from the pro-choice protests. I suppose the one that is particularly vocal in terms of linking the role of the church and the state is not the church, not the state, women should decide their fate. And that's kind of one of the frequent images used in the pro-choice movement. In the immediate aftermath then of the clinic opening, there were several debates in the Assembly. So the Junior Minister for Equality, who's a DUP, in a debate over about the legality of the clinic, stated that the most dangerous place for a child in Britain was in its mother's womb, referring to the level of abortions carried out in England and Wales. He also inferred that the abortions offered by Mary Stopes were unsafe, and that, again, going back to this phrase, our women need to be protected about that. The Attorney General, who's very well known for being anti-abortion, he then offered advice to the Justice Committee when they were questioning the Mary Stopes Clinic, and in doing so actually overstepped his role in terms of what his role was in reference to the Assembly. In terms of the political discourse then, I suppose what was particularly unusual to outsiders was this alliance between the DUP and the SDLP. They tabled motions against the MSI clinic. They participated in an All-Ireland meeting about abortion. And it's worth noting that, you know, historically the DUP, and mention anything All-Ireland, they literally, you know, that it's something they don't want to engage in. But on the abortion issue, they're very clearly strongly, this should be an All-Ireland policy. So they went on trips to America to meet anti-abortion groups. The debate then in the assemblies very much emphasised the difference between the DUP and, for instance, the Alliance Party and Sinn Féin. The DUP, for instance, criticised Sinn Féin for its seeming support of the MSI clinic and criticised it for being, you know, supporting a private provider of abortion services. Somewhat hypocritically, given that the DUP, the Minister for Health, has sold off a lot of the health service to private providers over the last 3 years in Northern Ireland. But that didn't enter into the debate at that stage. Okay. So looking at each of the individual parties then, Sinn Féin have stated they don't want to see the extension of the Abortion Act to Northern Ireland, but they are willing to consider, they believe that abortion should be provided in certain circumstances. The UUP and the Alliance Party, within each party, there's a mixture of views. Some MLAs are very openly pro-choice and some are anti-abortion. And the Green Party, which is one MLA in the Assembly, has called for reform. Looking specifically then at the issue about British citizenship and how that links in with access to abortion, the Good Friday Agreement set it down in law that if you're a resident of Northern Ireland, you could have Irish citizenship or British, or you could hold both. And as Horgan and O'Connor point out in their article about abortion and citizenship rights, It might be assumed then that women in Northern Ireland, being accepted as British citizens and as part of the UK, would share the same rights as women in the rest of the UK. So that would be a reasonable assumption to make, but actually it hasn't happened. And they argue that gender, despite being defined as one of the key grounds of the equality legislation in Northern Ireland, despite that happening, that women in Northern Ireland are not afforded equal citizenship on the basis of reproduction. So just to draw all those strands together, there is significant opposition to reform of the legislation here, from the political parties, from religious institutions, and from the judiciary. The barriers to legal reform, for instance, back in 2008, when there was an amendment put before Westminster to extend the 67 Act here, one of the arguments that came from Gordon Brown, for instance, was that to extend the 67 Act here would actually put the peace process in jeopardy. And that was a very firm stance, and it was repeated by, for instance, the Minister for Health at that time. In contrast to this, the British government lobbies for safe, free access to abortion in developing countries, and it has a specific policy named. So, for instance, the particular countries in southern parts of Africa, it is working to reform the abortion legislation, but not on its doorstep. Going back to the idea of the All-Ireland policy then, and this is one of the DUP members who very categorically said, in March of this year, when talking about Mary Stopes, across the island of Ireland, we share this common bond, seeking to protect, to provide the best care for mothers and unborn children. And skipping down, he links again the role of the churches. This common political bond has been replicated across our religious communities and names the churches concerned. So being very clear there that this is a debate which brings together political parties and the churches, and they're unified on that. To quote David Irvine, and this was back in the year 2000, in a debate about access to abortion in Northern Ireland, when the figure of 5 million fetuses being aborted in the UK, he comments beginning in a somewhat sarcastic tone, people are discriminated against by that evil, awful Britain who killed 5 million, that Britain with whom you want to be associated with politically and socially, that murderous, evil Britain, that will extend the Act, the Act will be extended, and eventually our people will be treated as equals. So he said that 13 years ago. Unfortunately, nothing has changed since then. So to conclude, post-1998, gender issues, along with a whole other raft of issues, have not moved forward in Northern Ireland. The political discourse is shaped by morally conservative views. The MSI opening helped to refocus those patriarchal views and heightened the alliance between parties such as the DUP and the SDLP. The opening did facilitate a wider public debate about access to abortion in Northern Ireland and resulted in the media portraying legal access to abortion in a very accurate way. But to sum up, abortion legislation remains one of the very few symbols of Britishness, which the political establishment here rejected.